Hey there, powerful soul. Welcome to Volume 2 of the Grow Through It podcast. I'm your host, Cassandra Austin McDonald. Here on the Grow Through It podcast, I share personal stories and the stories of others as we are growing through the journey of creating the life, love, and legacy of our dreams our way. Tune in as you may feel inspired to evolve into the best version of yourself. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode here on the Grow Through It podcast. I'm your host, Cassandra Austin McDonald, and I am excited to share a beloved guest with you all, Miss Christine Lucan. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did.
Okay, so you guys, I met Christine inside of a year-long community that I invested in for my business. You guys know I'm always sharing that I'm investing in myself and my business. And so we met in that space. And I started sharing in that space openly and freely my beliefs that I'm a God girl, that I still read scriptures, and I believe in the science and all that stuff. And so Christine and I actually connected on that level. So
yes, we did.
Welcome, Christine, and thank you for being here on the Grow Through It podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Yes, me too. So before we dive into all the juicy things we have to share with you all, we're going to talk about all things emotions and money. I'm excited.
My favorite. So
here's a bit about Christine. She is ready. Are you ready for money to support your happiness rather than stress you out? Then you need Christine Lucan, the financial dignity coach in your corner. As the founder of the financial dignity movement, Christine has coached hundreds of high-earning professionals, business owners, and divorcing women to pay off staggering amounts of debt and massively increase their net worth. The author of 3 books and host of the Money is Emotional podcast, Christine blends wise money management with emotional intelligence. When she's not coaching clients from her home office in Cincinnati, you can find this member of the National Association of Divorce Professionals curled up with a good book, a fluffy cat, and a strong cup of coffee. You can find Christine at www.christinelucan.com. And I will include her information in the show notes. So if y'all are wondering, like, how do I spell that? Don't worry, I got your back. So let's dive in. How did you get into this work? Because I find whenever I ask this question, there's a story. And so I'd love to hear your story and how you got into this work.
Yeah, well, my background has always been money. In college, I worked as a bank teller. I actually worked in collections at Citibank at one point. Wow. However, the reason why I got into this work isn't because I always did things the right way. In fact, I actually crashed and burned financially at age 26, despite having an accounting degree, despite working for a multi-million dollar manufacturing company as their staff accountant.
Wow. Okay. So this is deep.
Yes, it is. And the reason I hit financial rock bottom wasn't because I didn't know what I should be doing. I had all the head knowledge. The problem was my heart had hijacked my wallet. I was engaged to a guy. We had been together for 7 years from age 19 to age 26. And he was not great with money. And he was also not a very healthy person to be in relationship with. So I always tell the parents out there, like, this is the guy you don't want your daughters dating. Yeah. He was in and out of jobs and even in and out of jail. And I thought if I just loved him enough that he would change.
Oh man.
And he did. He got worse.
Oh, I know some of us can testify to that.
Yes. You know, it's like I saw the potential and I just thought if I just gave him enough love and support that he would blossom. And, you know, I think sometimes we have to have those hard lessons that, you know, some people are takers and they don't want what's best for us. They right. are only focused on themselves. And right. so I got to this point where, I was in debt. I had pretty much nothing in my bank account. My credit was shot. I jokingly say that if it's possible to have a negative score, I did.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it was, I was parking my car a half a mile away from my apartment so it wouldn't get towed.
Wow. So you went through the trenches.
I did. And there was a lot of shame and embarrassment around that because I was making decent money. For someone who was 26, I was making decent money.
Yeah.
I had an accounting degree. I had been on the honor roll. Like, when I looked around at my friends, like, they were all making progress in yeah. their lives. And I felt really ashamed and embarrassed by that, even more so because I should have known better.
Yeah.
And so it was really hard for me to swallow my pride and to reach out to my family and say, hey, I need some help, because I had no money to get another apartment. Like, the only way that I was going to get out of this situation was with some help, because, I probably barely had gas to leave.
Wow. And what was that moment like where you were about to pick up the phone and call family and say, like, I've got to swallow my pride and get some help?
Well, it was interesting because this actually happened in person for me.
Oh, wow.
I had gone out to lunch with my dad, and after lunch we got in the car, and he just like sat there for a moment, and he just like turned around and looked at me, and he's like, Christine, you just don't seem like you're happy. And I just sat there for a moment and I just said, I'm not. And I just like cried.
Yeah.
And my dad knew some of what was going on. And I just really appreciate that in that moment, he didn't say, I told you so. Like, oh, I told you that guy was a jerk. I told you you shouldn't have moved. Like, he didn't do any of that.
Yeah.
And so, parents out there, like, this is a big lesson.
It really is. It is, because so much that compounds the shame that you're already feeling. Like, it already exactly. takes a lot of courage to say, this is where I'm at. And
right.
to compound that with more shame, then you want to pull it back and say, oh, I wish I didn't say anything.
Right. And my dad said, look, I'm not going to pay your bills for you. I'm not just going to give you money, but here's what I will do. I will give you a safe place to stay for the next 90 days, rent free, and I will help you put together a plan to get back on your feet and get back into your own place.
That's beautiful.
Cool. Yeah. And yes. And in addition to that, he also, sat down with me and help me look over everything and create that step-by-step plan, because I knew how to budget. Yeah. I was helping to prepare the budget for the company that I worked for. I knew the mechanics of how to do this. However, when I looked at my bills, there was an emotional charge behind each of those. So for example, like, the one bill that like pissed me off the most was the Dillard's bill. And
I remember Dillard's.
And this was because, I'd had this charge card and I had gotten my ex added on as an authorized user. And the first bill that I got after I left was I had left him in the spring. And so when I'm looking at the Dillard's bill, there was a charge on there for the Valentine's Day present that my ex bought me with my credit card.
Ah!
And now I was going to have to pay for it.
Oh, man. Talk about adding salt to like insult to injury, salt on the
Yes. So when I say that money is emotional, that's not like a cute, trite little saying. That's like something I feel like deep down in my soul.
Oh, yeah.
Because I lived it. And, you know, having somebody else, you know, just look at everything and just say, hey, just do these one or two things and then we'll meet again next week. Because when I looked at my finances, it was almost like the equivalent of walking into your house after a tornado has struck. Like everything's a disaster and you don't even know where to start. You just want to slam the door and walk away. And I know many people who, you know, when you're in that situation with your finances, like that's exactly, you're like, I don't even know where to start. Everything's a disaster. So
I've been there. It's like your mind is just, there's so much going on. You don't even know which thing to pull out first.
Yeah. And so my dad did the equivalent of like turning my head and saying, okay, do you see this coat closet here in the hallway? Like just clean and organize this, like ignore the rest of the house and just do this. Right. And then when that was done, then we would progress. So, you know, he was able to look at all the bills to, you know, organize them in a way that made sense and say, okay, here's your plan of action. But, you know, he didn't give me the whole 30-step thing that I needed to do that first time that we met together. It was like, okay, do these two things and then we'll meet again next week.
Yeah.
And that was really what I needed to get the overwhelm out of it, because my dad wasn't emotionally attached to my money mess.
Yeah.
And so he could see it more clearly. To him, it was more logical. But, you know, when we're talking about our own personal finances, there's always some level of emotion to that.
For sure. That's just so beautiful. Like, I feel like I want to commend your dad that because we hear so many stories of shame in families where that actually is what prevents people who are in a financial distress situation to reach out because of the fear of more shame. And the fact that your dad handled it that way, it's like, whoa, like, dude, that's really commendable.
Yeah, absolutely. So I like to tell that story a lot, just, you know, so because I think people resonate with what I was going through, but also to tell parents like, hey, you know, I know with everything in you, you want to tell the other person, like, I told you so, like, just don't do it.
Well, yeah. And I'm a mother, you know, what's interesting is my son and I just had a conversation last night about, he wants to start managing his own Roth IRA account and he's 19. Okay. And so I was telling him like, okay, well, I'm going to have the mister help you, cause that's, you know, his zone of genius. And we're going to all sit down together and we're going to, you know, walk through this. But me hearing your story as a mother, it lets me know that if something, God forbid, ever happened on his end, how can I handle it in a way where I'm not exacerbating shame?
Yeah.
You know, because to see where you're at now, which the listeners will be able to hear more about that here in a bit, like, it's like, it, you can see like, well, if you support and you provide guidance and you provide a safe space, you're actually supporting them more.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously once I got out of that relationship, my finances improved pretty rapidly.
Yeah.
And about a year after I left the relationship, I remember this so distinctly. I was driving to work one day and the thought struck me that I couldn't remember the last time I was worried about money.
Mm.
And that was a total shock.
Wow.
Because the previous 7 years, all I ever did was worry about money.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it was like terror. Sometimes it was just like a low level anxiety, but that money fear and worry never really went away.
Yeah.
And I didn't even realize the burden of that until I was on the other side of it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so empowering to hear that, though, because I've experienced my own money woes, as I'm sure anyone listening to this has. And you know the feeling of chest tightening, pushing.
I know. I'm getting anxious just having you tell me about it.
Yeah, it's not a good place.
We can remember it, right?
well, tell us, like, what has the transition been like for you to go from telling, say, Dad, I need help, him walking you through this, rapidly seeing massive change in your finances, mm-hmm. to where you're at now, where you're like, I now lead people through this, and yeah. I can't remember the last time I had a money fear. I'm worried about money. Like, tell us about this shift where you're like, I'm now helping people through this because I've had my own transformation.
Yeah. Well, shortly after I had that realization about the fear and the worry about money, mm-hmm. very quickly after that, I thought, you know what? There's probably a lot of people out there who are in the same position that I was a year ago, mm-hmm. and they don't even realize that there's another way to do this. And it's actually not that hard. Yeah, like yeah. it was actually easier than I thought. Like, I had built it up to be a lot harder in my head. And so not long after that, my church brought on a financial literacy course. And one of the church employees asked me if I would help to facilitate. And she said, look, I know that, you know, you've been through the ringer with this, but you've got an accounting degree. And I think, you know, you've got the compassion to be able to help people yeah. with this. And so that's how it all started. I just started, you know, helping out with this class. And then, you know, as the years went on, I became in charge of the class. In the middle, so I taught that class for 10 years at my church as a volunteer.
Mm.
And probably about 5 years in, I found out that I could get certified as a financial counselor.
Nice.
And I'm like, I'm already doing this for people because yeah. there were people from the class that would want to meet in between sessions because they needed extra help. Or maybe it was someone who was single and they really weren't, you know, a numbers person, and they needed a little extra assistance. And so I went through the training, never thinking that I was going to make a business out of this, because mm-hmm. by that time, the company that I worked for, the manufacturing company, was actually my father's business.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And, you know, after a certain period of years where my brother and I were both working at the business, he brought us on as mm-hmm. part owners in the business. Nice. And so as I was doing, you know, this training and this education and in this informal coaching, you know, I had a job. Yeah. I was the vice president of HR and accounting. You know, I was part owner. I was making great money. I really never intended it to be a business. However, the more I did it, the more I fell in love with the transformation that I could see people going through. And yeah. it wasn't just the financial transformation, it was the emotional transformation. Yeah. And it was like, there was almost like a spiritual heaviness to financial problems and financial distress. And yeah. just seeing that fall away from people, you know, like getting a phone call from someone that you haven't seen in a year and them saying, like, you're the first person I called because I want to let you know I just paid off all my credit card debt. That's and just beautiful. Like hearing that joy in their voice, you know, it was just, how could you not fall in love with that? Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when I started my coaching business, honestly, I just thought this was going to be like a side hustle.
That's how it usually happens.
It does. And so, you know, it's like it got to this tipping point to where I just, there wasn't any satisfaction in working for the family business anymore. And it was just like, I wasn't helping people to the degree that I was in coaching. Yeah. And it was like, I knew that if I was going to help touch the lives of hundreds or thousands of people plus, yeah. it was never going to happen if I was still working at the family business.
Yeah.
And so that was probably one of the hardest decisions that I had to make, was to quit my job at the family business. You know, yeah. They bought my ownership back, and, you know, thankfully that gave me a little nest egg to launch my business. But, yeah, I've never looked back since then.
Was that like a full circle moment to go from your dad giving you all of this advice and guidance to now you're quitting the business to start your own? Like, that's like a full circle.
I know, but you know what? I told him it was partly his fault because he's the entrepreneur of the family and he has multiple businesses. Yeah. So, you know, I think at first he was, you know, like a little shocked. I don't know that he was, I think he was mostly proud. You know, at first I think there was that little bit of sting because I don't think he expected it. Yeah. But now he's absolutely my biggest cheerleader.
So your dad is like your mentor.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
That's so dope. That's yeah. so cool. So the question is coming up for me as I'm listening to you is, what if someone doesn't have the background that you have with the family support, the modeling, your yeah. dad modeling this in front of you? Like, what yeah. would you say to someone that's listening that would say like, man, that's great that you have that. I don't have that as my background.
Right.
What would you say to them if they're still seeking to search for this financial freedom and dignity that you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the wonderful thing about the internet is we can basically choose people to be our mentors.
Yeah.
And sometimes for free, sometimes for, you know, a little bit of money, depending yeah. on how much access you want to people. Right. That's one of the reasons why I started the Money is Emotional podcast, because I have so much I want to say about the emotional side of money, and I want to get it out there.
Yeah.
And I want that to be free for people.
Yeah. yeah.
And so, you know, yes, I have books, I have courses, I have coaching, but I wanted anybody, even if they have $0
yeah.
in their pocket, that, you know, hey, most people have a cell phone. They've got a way to listen to a podcast exactly. and, you know, they can get that information to help them start progressing on that yeah. path.
No, I think it's beautiful too, what you've built, because you have this progression of based on where someone is, the level of support they can receive. And I think that's so important, especially when we're talking about money, where mm-hmm. just to get started, some people are like, I can't afford your course or your coaching, but it's like, but you can listen to this free podcast and then you can buy this book. And then, and so I love the tierness yeah. of it, because to me, it gives people hope where it doesn't matter where you're at, there's resources available for you to get the support that you need.
Yeah. And it was interesting that, you know, as my journey evolved and, you know, the person that I got my coach training from, I realized that there was a big gap in the personal finance space, especially, you know, 10 years ago, that people were only talking about the logical side of money.
Yeah. The budgeting, the 1 + 1 = 2.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's tons of, you know, blog posts and, you know, things out there where it's like, you can get the checklist of like, here's your 7 steps to take. And if you just take these steps, then you're going to get these results.
Yeah.
And what I realized was with my own experience, you know, here I was, someone who was a smart girl,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
who completely did a bunch of stupid things with money.
Yeah.
And I got really curious about why that was. You know, and a decade ago, it was like, there were very few resources on the psychology of money. Yeah. And the emotional side of money. And so I was looking for things anywhere I could find them. And, yeah. and interestingly enough, even though I had an accounting degree, I'd always been interested in psychology. So I actually have a minor in psychology, which is kind of weird to be paired with like an accounting degree.
It's but your calling.
Yeah, I was always just so fascinated with what drives people to do things.
Yeah.
And what I started out early in my career basically using somebody else's formula to coach people. And what I saw was there were certain things that were roadblocks for people. And I realized it was because there were things that weren't addressing the emotional side of the equation. And so I began to start tweaking things and trying things and, you know, trying things on myself, suggesting things to clients. And, you know, over this period of time, I've created this system where I look at each and every piece of what a full, healthy financial life looks like, you know, the spending, the saving, the debt reduction, the investing, you know, money in relationships, the money mindset, and putting together this system that really brings the two sides together.
I love that. You know, it's interesting as I'm hearing you talk, I think about where I was many years ago when I got out of a not so great relationship too. And I think what was ironic about my journey at the time is I was starting my healing journey as I was working on my finances. And I never really put the two together that that's what was happening. But now that we're talking, I'm like, no wonder I was able to clean up my finances because I was healing at the same time. And so there was probably a connection there that was happening.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, it's so interesting because, you know, I published my book, Money is Emotional, in 2017. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until a year later that I found out that scientists had discovered that it's impossible to make a purely logical decision.
Of course.
The moment of
years and our intuition.
I know. So the moment of decision happens in the same part of our brain that processes emotion. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because the scientists discovered it completely by accident. Mm. They were studying this group of stroke patients that had damage in this particular part of the brain. Mm-hmm. And they were very high functioning, but they had problems expressing emotion and interpreting emotion in other people. And that was basically what they were studying.
Yeah.
Well, they took a break for lunch and they said, would you like a hamburger or a chicken sandwich for lunch? None of them could make a decision.
Mm.
And that's when they're like, what is going on here? So I thought that was very interesting. And so obviously that extends way beyond finances. You know, there is some element of emotion in every decision that we make. And that's not necessarily bad.
No, and I think the key too is understanding what your like sweet spot is when it comes to making good decisions. Because we do have this connection between our brain and our emotions, where our emotions can hijack the prefrontal cortex, which is the decision-making part of our brain.
Yes.
And before you know it, you're going to Idaho when you want to come down here to Florida.
Yeah.
So I think it's important for people to know like their sweet spot, but then also not to feel shame if you've made an emotional decision, because you can correct that. And I know you talk about how to manage your emotions with money. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Like what you've discovered?
Yeah. Well, and you know, that's interesting that you were talking about the sweet spot, because the way that I like to explain this is, you know, the best decisions around money happen when we consult both our logic and our emotions. And so if we think about it this way, we can almost think of the voice of reason mm-hmm. and the voice of emotion, almost mm-hmm. as being like two radio stations that are playing simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And so the voice of reason is kind of quiet and calm mm-hmm. and, you know, it's just always there in the background. It doesn't mm-hmm. fluctuate. It's, you know, it just is what it is. Mm-hmm. Now, emotions don't do that. Emotions no. are up and down, right? So they are loud, they're quiet, they're kind of in between. Yeah. So what we need to do is when we're feeling like our emotions are loud, we need to give ourselves space for our emotional volume to drop so that mm. we can hear both our emotions and the voice of reason.
Which I is love logic. That. I love yeah. that analogy. Cause like, as you're talking, I can I'm a visual person. I can visualize like, yeah, let's turn the volume down. Let's bring mm-hmm. this channel down a little bit.
Right. And so there are great ways for us to bring down that emotional volume. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, we don't have to make a snap decision, especially a large decision about our personal finances.
Right.
You know, if we're thinking about buying a car, buying a house, you know, I always tell people, don't let that salesman tell you that I can't guarantee that car won't be there tomorrow. It's going to be there tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just selling.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, it's such a shame that we are not taught emotional intelligence. We are not taught how to regulate our emotions yeah. and how to express our emotions yeah. in a healthy way. So, you know, if you're feeling sad, you know, sometimes people like to soothe themselves with some online shopping if they're feeling sad. Yeah. You know what? If you're feeling sad, maybe you just need to have a good cry. Maybe you need to watch a movie that makes yeah. you cry just yeah. to get it all out.
Exactly.
Maybe you need a hug and a nap, yeah. right? You know, if you think about like your emotions are like kind of like your inner child. You know,
yeah.
When we
yeah.
think about when our emotions are very loud and out of control, they're almost like a toddler. So
yes.
we almost have to treat them in that way and say, you know, how can we let them have this tantrum, this crying fit in a way that's safe, that's not going to hurt
right.
the rest of our lives, right? And so, you know, like if you're really angry, if you're pissed off, I have a lot of clients who I work with, women who are going through divorce. I will tell them, enroll in a kickboxing class, go for a good long run, do a HIIT workout, like do something that is going to move that angry energy out of your body. Because if you sit there and stew in it or try to stuff it down, it's going to come popping out like some evil jack-in-the-box at like the worst possible time.
Every time. And you know, hearing you talk about this, I'm so grateful for intuition because I'm thinking about my journey, you know, where I'm like, I was doing all that stuff and didn't even know that it was a thing. At some point, I think I realized that the decisions I was making before, my emotions were driving a lot of my decisions, but I don't think it was a conscious thought.
Right.
I think it was just me being in this process of, I don't want to repeat that. I want to create something different and let's try something different.
Yeah.
And I think in layman's terms, that's like what you're saying too, is like, you notice you've been in a pattern, you've been spending emotionally, you're doing what women do, retail therapy. That's, they say that for a reason, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's like, you notice, I don't want to do this anymore. So now it's like, well, let's make a conscious choice to do something different when you're emotionally activated.
Absolutely. And I think it's really important to identify what is that root emotion, because there are different reasons why people overspend. Like, we could take three women who overspend in the exact same store, and they could be doing it for completely different reasons, right? Mm-hmm. So one of them might, you know, feel sad or anxious or depressed, and shopping makes her feel better or distracts her. You know, it might be, you know, I actually had a woman who I was talking to who, you know, she had created this story in her head that it's hard for me to make friends. And she didn't have a lot of female friends. But you know who would be her friends? The ladies at her favorite clothing store.
Oh.
And she got into this habit of going into the store several times a week.
Wow.
And that so how many times does she actually need those clothes?
Oh my gosh. Like, so to me, like that, to me, that's like loneliness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like if you're feeling lonely, you know, and it's like, oh, I connect with this salesperson. They make me feel something.
Right.
It's like, I see why you like, you really have to get to the root of like, what is the emotion? Because that's why you're, that's driving your behavior.
Right. Because you have to, you know, you have to, the person who is, you know, who's feeling sad might just need to make a list of things that make her feel happy and mm-hmm. have that handy as a reminder. Like I actually had a client who, whenever her mother was very overbearing and whenever she would have a conversation with her mother that was upsetting, she would go online and do all kinds of shopping because it was a distraction, you know, it was something that would immediately make her feel better. So I had her make a list and like stick it to her computer monitor. And it basically said, are you feeling sad or upset? Before you shop, try one of these instead. And it was like, you know, take a walk with your husband, take a long bath, go cuddle with your cats, watch a funny movie. And so she had this list of 10 things where it was like, she could give herself permission to go back and shop if she had done one of these things first.
Yeah.
And the amount of shopping was cut down by like 70%.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah.
But that goes to show that we can access other ways to deal with what we're experiencing in our body and our emotions. We just sometimes you just need that. I've done that with, I talked to my listeners about emotional eating, how I was on a journey of overcoming from that. I literally put sticky notes on the cabinets and on the fridge and said, are you hungry? What do you need to feel?
Well, right. They call it comfort food. You know, like I'm located down here in Cincinnati, Kentucky. Like there's some good Southern cooking down here.
Yeah. It's interesting when you hear these phrases like retail therapy, comfort food, like it's almost like they're psychologically conditioning you into it's okay. It's going to make you feel better.
Everyone does it. And here's the thing, everybody does do it and no one is perfect with this. And, you know, you had said something earlier, like, you know, tell us how you got from, you know, this state of constant worry and anxiety to never worrying about money.
Yeah.
I just want you to know that even with a net worth in the millions, there are still times where I feel emotionally triggered around money.
I feel like that's comforting to hear because oftentimes people associate emotions that are disempowering with money to mean you're just completely broke. And to hear someone who has, you know, a net worth up in the millions to say, no, I still have experiences like this. I think that can right there in and of itself help someone to let go of some of the shame because it's not just about the bank account balance. It really starts with whatever experience you're having within you. And not making these balances mean something about you. Because I think we tend to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing too is, you know, when we're talking about these techniques to lower the emotional volume and get us to a good place where we can make a decision, I also want to let people know that it's never about turning off the emotion. Because you've probably experienced this as well, but there have been times when I have looked at a financial decision on paper and it looks like an A+ thing, but you have this gut feeling that something isn't right.
Yep.
And you know, if you go against that feeling,
it's not going to be good.
Later on down the line, you're like, I knew something wasn't right about that, you know? And so, you know, thankfully I haven't made a ton of those decisions because I try to stay very in tune with my intuition and to be honoring both, you know, looking at the facts of, okay, you know, what is, you know, what does personal finance say? The, you know, the things that we should be doing, the goals that we should be achieving, et cetera, and the different techniques to get there. And, you know, let's look at that versus how we're feeling. Does that feel good? Does that feel like there's something off there? And personal finance is not cut and dry. And I know there's a lot of books out there that will try to get you to believe that it is, and it's not.
But I love that you mentioned the intuitive piece, because I think as women, and I know I probably have, last time I looked at my stats, I think it's 70% women listening. So I think it's important
you
know, to have this conversation, because I notice with when I'm working with women, there's still this challenge with making the distinction between an emotional decision versus an intuitive decision. And so sometimes you have to untangle that. And for you to say like, no, we want to be connected to our intuition when we're making money decisions, because I think it's empowering to hear, as women, we can make empowering decisions about money. And I know you've talked about on some of your posts I've read before, the importance of women not handing off financial responsibility to their partner. So I'd love to hear like your take on that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that I like to say is that you have a relationship with money. Mm-hmm. And if you're married, money is like the third person in the relationship.
It's a party.
And so, you know, sometimes if both you and your partner don't have a good relationship with money, it can feel like this triangulation, right? Mm-hmm. It can feel like money is this complete stranger, you know, because your spouse or partner is, you know, having the money date and handling all the money details, and you're the third wheel and you're left out in the cold.
Oh my gosh, that's so good.
And I see this happen with so many women who, you know, they file for divorce, and even if they're getting a good amount of support, or, you know, they're going to get a decent size settlement, or they even have a good job.
Yeah.
If they haven't had a relationship with money, all of a sudden, once they're divorced, it's like, they're sitting on the couch next to money, and money feels like a complete stranger. And they're like, I don't even know what to do with you.
Wow. That's so important too, because I'm a huge advocate for making choices that are best for you. And so a lot of times throughout conversations I've had here on the podcast about relationships, you know, I tell people like, if divorce is what's best, like, I'm not going to say otherwise. Like, I'm not one of those that's like, make it work. I'm like, if it's not working, it's not working.
Yeah. You usually know if it's not working.
Yes. So I think it's important for women who are either divorced or contemplating it, mm-hmm. to know first and foremost the importance of having their own relationship with money, but also women who are still in relationship with someone who may be the one managing all the money, to have their own relationship with money.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. Almost every single day of your life until the day you die, you are going to be interacting with money. Mm-hmm. You're going to be making money. You're going to be managing money. You're going to be spending money. You're going to be investing money. You're going to be handling money. You know, it's like food. It's ever present in our lives. And so it's important that we have a good relationship with money.
For sure.
And if we think about what are some of the things that make for a good relationship with anybody, you know, the first one is respect. Now, if I don't respect my husband, we're not going to have a good marriage.
Very true.
If you don't respect your money, you're not going to have a good relationship with it. And so here's two ways to tell if you are respecting money. What are you thinking and what are you saying about money? I encourage my clients to make a list of the negative things that they're saying about money, because if you're saying things like, you know, as soon as money comes, it goes right back out. Making money is hard. Rich people are evil and greedy. Now, if you were to say things in the same spirit about your spouse or partner.
Yeah, right? I would question why you're with them.
Right. Yes. Well, that's the same thing. Like, you know, if you trash talk your spouse, they don't want to be around you. Well, if you trash talk money, it's not going to want to be around you.
Yes. I hope y'all are writing this stuff down. She's over here dropping nuggets and homework assignments. I hope y'all are taking notes and writing all this down. It's gold.
Yes. And the other way to tell if you're respecting money is, are you physically respecting your money? So when, you know, I used to do a lot more public speaking pre-COVID, and, you know, speaking to groups of like professional women was like a normal part of my business back then. And so I would say, all right, ladies, I want you to open up your purse. And I said, if I were to walk around and look in your purse, what would I find? Would I find crumpled up receipts? Would I find loose change laying in the bottom? Would I find your dollar bills all crumpled up in there?
Wow. Or
would I find, you know, all your bills folded nice and neatly, right where they're supposed to be? The one thing I always give people permission is, if your wallet is falling apart and looks like it belongs to a homeless person, it's time to buy a new wallet.
That part. I agree.
Because that's your money's home.
I love that you shared that, because I feel like the tangible piece, especially with love languages, like if you're a physical touch type of person, you really want to like take this on as a thing, because touching, I feel like, for me personally, like I'm an affectionate person.
Yeah. And
I do notice a difference when I'm actually tangibly handling money versus just the digital aspect.
Yep. Absolutely. And same thing goes with your financial paperwork. Now, I had a friend, I still have a friend. She's an artist, and she was just talking about like how stressful tax time was for her. And you know, she teaches art classes part-time. So I'm thinking like, how stressful can this be?
Yeah.
And I said, tell me about your filing system. And she just like kind of looked at me and she's like, so I have a shoebox on my desk where I put receipts. And when it gets full, I empty it into a trash bag that I keep in my closet. That was like, wow.
Yeah,
it's like, I can see how respected your money feels right now. I'm just going to put that in a trash bag in the closet. And so she would basically like empty out this trash bag on her kitchen table and take like 3 days to sort everything out and get in an order for her CPA. And I said, I am going to save you at least 2.5 days next year when it comes to tax time. And I said, all you need to do is go to the office supply store and buy 12 file folders. And because you're an artist, buy ones that are pretty and colorful. Write the name of the month on top of each one. When your receipts come in for January, put them in the January folder. That's all you need to do. When your bank statement comes in from your business bank account, just put that in there. That's all you need to do. Yeah. She called me the next year. She said, I got all my tax stuff done in like an hour.
I love that.
She's like, you gave me 3 days of my life back. And I was like, because you're now respecting your money.
Oh my gosh. I think that's such a powerful way to see too. Like you're saving time. Like we're talking about like the only currency we will never get back, time.
That's true. Absolutely.
And like, what do you see as a connection with time and money?
Well, typically, if people aren't respecting, you know, there's almost like this this synergistic relationship between time and money.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we are equally respecting both, then they can be mutually supportive. So, you know, for example, when I started my business, I had this hang up around hiring a cleaning lady because I thought only like rich, snotty people had cleaning ladies.
I've been there.
Thankfully, I got over that. But what it came down to was I crunched the numbers, and it was like, when I looked at, you know, it took me about 10 hours a month, you know, spread out over the various weeks to clean my house the way I wanted it to be cleaned.
Yeah.
And then when I looked at hiring somebody who is good and who is efficient, you know, I was basically started paying somebody to come and clean once every 2 weeks. They got it done in 3 hours. So, you know, so basically they were accomplishing the same amount of cleaning in 6 hours, you know, wow, for the 4 weeks, whereas it took me 10. Yeah. And then when I looked at how much I paid that person versus how much I could charge for my time.
Yeah.
It was a complete no-brainer. I was like, I only need to sell like 1 or 2 hours of my time to completely cover this.
And I feel like now we're getting into like the entrepreneur mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. So, you know, and I think the other main key for having a great relationship with money is spending regular quality time with your money. Because in any relationship, you know, if you say, hey, I want to have a great relationship with the mister, and then you never spend any time with them.
Yeah.
Right. Then it's exactly, it's not going to be a good relationship. But the thing with money is that it does not have to be complicated, and it does not have to be 4 hours a week.
Yeah.
We can create super simple systems that automate everything that can be automated, so that we're just going in to double check things, to, you know, stay on top of it. I recommend that people do a weekly money date. And I call it a date for a reason, because I don't want it to feel like a chore.
Yeah.
I want it to feel like it's something special. So I tell people, you know, don't go down in your basement on a card table with a bare bulb hanging from the ceiling. No. You know, when you're doing your money date, you know, fix a fancy cup of tea or get your favorite glass of wine and light a scented candle, maybe play some relaxing or upbeat music. And it really should only take you 15 to 20 minutes a week if you're using technology to help.
Yeah, that's not that long at all.
No, no. And that's enough for you to be aware without being obsessed.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. You've shared so many amazing like nuggets and knowledge. Is there any final thoughts that you feel like you would want to leave before we get ready to complete this episode?
Oh my gosh, we've talked about so much good stuff already. You know, I think it really is not allowing that shame or, you know, trepidation of, I don't know what I'm doing, and having that keep you from, you know, starting on this journey or continuing on this journey to improve your personal finances. Because if you're not managing them well, it will be a source of stress and fear for you. But if you're managing things well, you get to this point to where 99% of the time, money is supporting your happiness.
Mm.
It's not stressing you out. You know, can you ever get to that point where there's going to be zero stress about money? No, because as you grow and improve and get to higher levels of wealth, you know, there are more things to deal with. You know, there are new situations that you've never encountered. And, you know, at every level, there's going to be things to learn and, you know, fears to conquer, et cetera. But it's much better to have those kinds of challenges and problems with money in the bank than, you know, living in a basement apartment, parking your car a half a mile away, dodging creditor calls, and, you know, going and pawning things at the pawn shop so that you can buy groceries.
Yeah.
Because I did that.
What a full circle, like, to see where you were to where you are now. I think it's so inspiring to hear that it doesn't matter where you're at, that you can get to the other side. And that's what this podcast is all about, like, grow through it and get to the other side, whatever.
Yeah. Hey, and it's not too late. Just because I, you know, yes, I'm thankful that I hit financial rock bottom at age 26. It doesn't matter if you're 36, if you're 46, if you're 56 or 66, doesn't matter. You know, you can always turn the page.
I love that. Well, thank you so much, Christine, for coming here and sharing all your valuable insights and knowledge and wisdom. And where would you prefer people to find you at on these internet streets?
Yeah, well, they can go to my website, which is just my name, ChristineLucan.com. Or if they're super interested in the podcast, they can go to MoneyIsEmotionalPodcast.com.
Very nice. I hope you all took notes. And I hope that you found value in this episode, and I will chat with y'all next time. Take care now. Thank you for listening to this episode. Please make sure to subscribe, like, share, and leave your review for the podcast. To learn more, go to www.cassandraaustin.com.